This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. This is the first Geek Squawks of 2018, so we were just having a discussion during the ad break, and we were thinking, like, hey, why not we talk about some of the things in more detail of like what we're really excited about in 2018. I know, Matt, you mentioned very briefly about the vertical farming. So I'm a big fan of it, and I actually did check it out. I really wanted to talk about Plenty, which is the San Francisco company.
Oh, yeah,
company.
I couldn't remember the name of the company. I was sitting there thinking, what's it called? Oh, darn.
Yeah, so Plenty is funded by Amazon's Jeff Bezos, which is why I just, you know, it lit up in me, because I'm like, this could be one of those areas, because Amazon bought Whole Foods for, you know, massive amount of money.
Which is why I mentioned that they have a warehouse now in Seattle, because, you know, obviously that's one of the largest hubs for Amazon, and it's providing fresh food. So you can see what the connection between them is. Mm. This is, you know, literally this is taking the food to the distributor and sending it straight out to local communities.
Yeah, so right now Plenty is headquartered in San Francisco. They're building enormous indoor farms to grow fresh produce, and it's mainly greens at this point of time. It's close to or inside of cities where they will be eaten, so it's kind of like, you know, food for the area, for the community, for the street itself, which cuts down on the CO2 requirements for, you know, transportation of food and stuff like that. But Plenty has 100,000 square feet at this point of time, which is retrofitted from the former warehouse in San Francisco, and it's now a second facility has just opened up in the outskirts of Seattle, which is again where Amazon is probably, you know, looking at as well. So like the thing is though, with this vertical farming, I think it's a great idea. I love it. Like I've seen one on a smaller scale in Singapore, and it works well for that one particular neighborhood in that area. Mm. I'm hoping to see more of these in neighborhoods in Klang Valley, because, you know, our areas is crying out. You live in Putrajaya, which is, you know, another area that's crying out for fresh produce food at a cost that is affordable to everyone. Because right now, if I want like a freshly produced vegetable, I go to a very certain store and it's expensive. It's because of the transportation and the distance. But if you could actually just feed the community around there, you save a lot, and it makes a whole bunch of sense.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you see that there are wet markets in most communities. So you could actually potentially do a lot of growing on site at the wet markets. Mm. I mean, one thing that Putrajaya does that's quite good is a lot of the larger apartment blocks actually have these kind of gardening areas for residents, so you can, you know, you can get yourself a little plot and grow your own food. But it would be nice to see this kind of ramped up, like the scale ramped up, because I think it's something that in developing countries, nearly 60% of fresh food is wasted before it gets to market. It's actually perished before it gets to the point of sale. Mm. And in developed countries, almost 50% of fresh food is thrown away unsold from the supermarket. So we do have to make a huge change, especially when it comes to, you know, fruit and vegetables, because it takes a long time to grow a potato.
Oh, yeah.
You don't put one in one night and you get it the next morning. You know, it takes a few months.
That's the thing we always forget about. You know, these things take time before you could actually consume them.
Yeah, because every time you want a potato, you go to the supermarket and you get another one. You don't have to wait until next year's growing cycle for the potato to come up. Yeah.
I do see a future, you know, in the dystopia future where probably, you know, it becomes in a way where you pre-book your meal or your freshly produced food in a year in advance, because, you know, that's how long it takes to, you know, generate.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the movie Soylent Green, only very, very rich people are able to eat fresh fruit and vegetables and meat. Everyone else just gets to eat churned up human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let's just hope that, you know, all these vertical farming actually starts to kick off here in KL especially. So, you know, down south, they really start to doing this. Let's move on to about the kidneys. Anything about, you know, kidneys that you're excited about in 2018?
Yeah, I love the kidneys. Kidneys are going to be big in, big in 2018. No, I mean, we were talking earlier about Elon Musk and, you know, this neuro enhancement and bio enhancements. We've also been talking about things like bioprintable organs, which people have been working on. Now, that technology has been a little bit slow coming forward. But in the meantime, what we have is a new device, which is actually to help people with chronic kidney disease, because there are about 2 million people worldwide who suffer from chronic kidney disease, and they have to, they're usually on a waiting list for a transfer, but they have to go in for dialysis. And dialysis takes hours and hours of people's time, and you have to be hooked up to a machine and it cleans your blood. So a company, or a team rather, at the University of California in San Francisco, they've actually come up with the first implantable artificial kidney. So it's not actually an organic organ. It's not a replacement for an organ. It's actually a device. It's a pump, really, that sits inside the body. It's about the size of a coffee cup, and it does that work of dialysis for you. So it could help a lot of people get off the list for transplants, because it could offer them a stable and long-term solution to keep their own kidneys, which, of course, is a much better solution, because you don't need all of the you don't have to wait for somebody to donate one, and you don't have to take all the drugs to stop the body rejecting one. So yeah, this is kind of a big step forward, because this is a permanent device that can stay inside the body. We've had things in the past like artificial hearts, but they're only temporary. They only work for a short space of time before you have to get a replacement. But this will enable you to carry on with your not so well functioning kidneys and carry on a normal life.
The other thing that I'm excited about in 2018 is the e-reader for blind people. Now, you know, we spoke about how, you know, the world is moving to this screenless technology. That's what you mean, right? Yeah. So it's screenless technology. You know, everyone's just going to be talking to the devices instead of, you know, using it like how we were to use it now. Learning Braille helps the blind people to, you know, develop literacy skills, including spelling and punctuations, that correlate with, you know, higher rates of employment. But there's a huge decline of people who can, you know, read Braille because of this ability, you know, text-to-speech softwares, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And everyone's just now forgetting on how to actually just, you know, read.
Learning how
to read and spelling and punctuation. So the cost of producing Braille has actually been, you know, still unaffordable by many people. So the Bristol Braille Technology, they have developed an affordable Braille e-reader for blind people, and it's called Canute. So the device, which can store thousands of Braille e-books files, is the world's first multiple line Braille e-reader. So now, you know, they have options of multiple lines displayed, or allows for true context of the Braille math or music or tabular data in science book. And the plan is to sell Canute for the price of an iPhone, which is just under about £800, which would make it about 20 times cheaper than existing digital Braille devices. So, you know what, I think it's about time that technology also takes a look at, you know, the people who have some sort of disability here.
Yeah, because the traditional Braille readers have just been a single line. Yeah. So they've been a reader that sits kind of on the table, and it's just one line. Mm. So it is very difficult to get, as you said, the full context of something when you're only seeing part by part of it. And yes, if you're looking at, like you said, tabular data or maths or music or science books,
it's really
you need
hard.
That ability to scan over the entire page, which is something that, you know, sighted people take absolutely for granted.
Yeah, true. The other thing that you're looking forward to, Matt, is this power thing, because we seem to always just need more energy, need more power.
No, well, a lot of people have seen the massive kites that they use in Bali, for example. If you go on holiday to Bali, you see all the massive wows that they put up. And the wows can be, you know, like 20, well, they can, sorry, not 20 meters. They can be about 20 feet across. Mm. So they can be about 6-7 meters across. So Google's X has partnered with a company called Kite Power Systems. Mm-hmm. Also, it's taking investment from Shell and E.ON and Schlumberger. And what they're doing is actually putting wind turbines on kites. So the idea is to create these kind of mobile turbine stations, because it's very difficult. At the moment, we either have to put wind turbines, you know, on the top of hills, or we have to put them on very flat plains, or we have to put them out in the sea. So that usually requires an awful lot of additional engineering, because you're not taking the power directly from the turbine. It's still having to be sent down a cable to somewhere else. So there's a lot of architecture involved, especially with the offshore wind farms. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cabling that has to come back to shore. So the idea with these kites is, and the company KPS, is that you can actually have, if you have like a mine in a remote place or whatever, you can fly the kite up and generate your own power, which will come straight down the cable into the plant. So it's much cheaper to set up. It's mobile, it's flexible, because you can move it to wherever you need. For developing countries, it's very useful, because again, you have the flexibility to meet growing needs in location, so you don't need so much physical plant. They're still at kind of the beginning stages at the moment. They know that they're not going to be able to get the scale of the big offshore turbines, which can go up to 3 megawatts. So what they're looking at is these 500 kilowatt kind of generation, which is still fairly meaty, especially as you can actually fly them in sequence. Once you put one up, they lock in position, because they look just like a giant plane. Yeah. It's a wing with a bunch of propellers on, and it stays up in the air. They've been testing smaller models on a Ministry of Defense range since 2016, but they're currently building a much bigger kite that they're hoping will be tested in the air by the coming summer. So this is kind of really kind of useful. And I'm not sure if it's mentioned in any of the information here, but one would hope that they can fly the kite high enough that they won't be a danger to birds as well, because a lot of birds get caught in the turbine. So hopefully they can put the power generation out of the reach. And of course, you know, there's a lot of wind.
Yeah.
The higher up you go, there's, you know, there's these very powerful jet streams. So maybe we can start to tap into those.
Mm. It'll be a sight to watch, though, if you see all these kites. You know,
well, you probably won't see very much. That's the thing, because they'll fly so high that you'll just see a speck. What what you might have to be careful of is commercial jets shearing through the lines. Mm.
Anyways, we'll go for a short break, and when we come back, we will have the first King of the Crowd, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
And we're back, and it's time for King of the Crowd, the first one of the year. Matt, what do we have?
Well, I'm asking you to give your money for nothing for the first King of the Crowd of the year.
Wow. Big ask.
Big ask. This is a website called Fiskit.com. That's FISKKIT.com. Now, they've actually been around for a few years. They've done a few rounds of crowdfunding already. And what they are is essentially a commenting system for articles on the internet. So we've been talking a lot about fake news over the last year or so. This is one way of combating that fake news. Mm-hmm. What happens is it's kind of open source, a bit like Wikipedia. People can go in and comment on articles. So you can see all of people's comment histories as you read through the article, and it gives you a sense that this is true, this isn't true. People can put sources where they've been omitted, or they can put counter information. So as I said, the company has been around for a few years already. What they're doing now is they have a new project that they're trying to integrate into the system, which is a new product that they're trying to integrate into the system, which is a troll filter, they're trying to build, because that's one of the weaknesses of this kind of crowdsource model, that the trolls can come in and can actually disrupt the sources. So that's what they're looking for now. You can go and check it out. If you go to Fiskit.com, you have to log in with your Facebook profile. They want your true name and identity, because this is all about authenticity. So they want to know who you are to check that you are a reputable source when you comment on the articles. You can give anywhere from $5 through to $1,000. There are a bunch of perks, but the idea is that it will go beyond the website they have at the moment, and it will actually become a comment system that can be embedded into any network. So you can actually take that system and embed it into your own website, or it can be embedded into sites like Facebook and Twitter. So it's actually a really good step towards this thing. It is, at the moment, I think it's a not-for-profit.
Yeah.
Depending on what country you live in, your donations will be tax-free as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Fiskit.com, Fiskit.com. Go and check it out. And if you like it, give them some money.
It's starting from $5 and it goes up all the way to $1,000.
Yeah, for different perks. So, yeah, I mean, you can discuss your own concepts for Fiskit to integrate with them if you pay enough and all this kind of cool stuff.
Anyways, check it out. It's Fiskit with 2 Ks. Next up, before we end today's show, just something for you to be cautious of with the new year. I came across this article and it kind of solidify what we've been talking about the past 3 weeks at least. And scientists have warned that we may be creating a digital dark age. Now, because in all these photos that we've talked about, you know, all the photos that we snap and we post them on Facebook, Instagram, all our tweets, our, you know, messages on WeChat and WhatsApp, you know, we have this assumption that it's just going to last forever. But, you know, it really isn't, though. The reality, though, it's really at risk of just disappearing off. Because unlike previous decades, there's actually no physical record
that
we can keep here.
This is the kind of conundrum, right?
Yeah.
That we have all this digital data, which is fantastic because we can compress it and store it in a really small, you know, store a lot of information in a really small space. If you printed off every single photo and wanted to keep it, I mean, I've got 14,000 on my phone which is ridiculous. Where am I going to keep 14,000 photos? But they can all sit in, you know, some tiny portion of a server farm somewhere. Mm. But having said that, if it's just ones and zeros, does it really exist?
Mm.
You know, it's gonna be very hard to maintain the integrity of that over a long period of time.
Mm. So computer and data specialists refer to this whole thing, this era of lost data, as a digital dark age. Other experts call on the 21st century as an information black hole, because the digital information we're creating right now may not be readable by machines and software programs of the future. So even though if they're just ones and zeros, the way that these ones and zeros are stored in, or the platforms that they're stored in, is at risk of just going away in the future.
Yeah.
So the problem is not so much of, like, you know, taking the physical stuff into the digital world. It's just that when it moves to a digital world, it's out of your hands. It goes to a company, and the company now owns your photos. So, you know, Instagram owns their photo. What if Instagram shuts down?
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know, and I mean, there's your photos.
There's two other issues as well, which is one you touched on, which is formats.
Mm.
You might not be able to open the format it was recorded in 20 years' time. But also there's the degradation of the storage media. You know, we assume that because it's on a hard drive or a server somewhere, that it's safe. But we've all got loads of hard drives at home that are full of information that we can't do.
I can't access it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, it's had some kind of mechanical fault or whatever. Yeah. There's nothing you can do to get the information. So we do have to be very, very careful.
Mm.
And of course, we're not forgetting that all of this relies on electricity. Turn the electricity off and your memories simply cease to exist.
Yeah. And also, you know, a lot of people, they talk about, you know, backups and backups. But, you know, according to the report, many of the world's largest companies and database enterprises, they still rely on the old storage medium, which is magnetic tapes. In 1952, IBM introduced the first magnetic tape data storage system, and it's still being used until today because a lot of them say the magnetic tape is the backup of the backup that we would have right now. So you go, you know, the physical day of, you know, of having these kind of data that's stored in a physical shape is so important that I think we're probably, you know, going to have that risk of losing everything in the future. Anyways, let's move on to Geek Tunes, Matt. The first one of the year. This has got to be something upbeat, at least. I hope it's upbeat.
Definitely. Yeah. This is a track that, well, I mean, it's full of whistles and calls. This is a real wake up to 2018 song. This is The Go Team with Mayday.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.